Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Instrument and has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar, and let me adjust this guy here. There we go. Welcome. We have a great show. I'm very honored to have on the show, obviously, JP and Lisa, who I've known for a month of Sundays, but also the Licata brothers, and it reminds me a little bit of me and my brother with the Floro brothers, but they're Peruvian-Italian descent, so that makes an interesting musical match. But they have a new album called Kindle the Flame. I'm going to show it to you right now, and we're going to play some clips about it and talk about a little bit about this album. It's an interesting project, and the reason JP and Lisa are here is they produced and mixed the album, so... I want to welcome both Jimmy and Tony. Welcome. It's really good to have you guys here.
Yeah, really glad to be here. Thank you.
And they have some very cool guitars, too. We'll talk about that later. Anyway, so let's talk a little bit first about your background, your influences, what you were into, how much JP ruined your life.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. But,
we don't have that kind of time.
But go ahead and let me know a little bit. Were you guys, you know, what you were inspired by? So we can get a feel of where you're going with this album.
Yeah, for sure. Feel free to jump in whenever you want. But our biggest influence was definitely just the Beatles. Every aspect about them, how they used recording technology, their songwriting, their melodies, their harmony, just everything about it. So the Beatles, really hugely influenced by the Everly Brothers, by Simon and Garfunkel, especially their lyric writing. Their stuff is ridiculously good. And Seals and Crofts, we were very big fans of as well. Mm-hmm. And then you want to hop on any of that?
Yeah, well, that's mostly the music that we grew up on. And then when we started performing at open mics about 9 years ago, we just became overwhelmed with new music that the adults in the area were introducing us to.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to like singing technique, as we were taking vocal lessons, our favorite person to study is, of course, Sinatra. And of course, those arrangements are incredible. And so... our doors open from that point on, listening to standards, listening to the old folk and blues and country, and just learning how to incorporate that roots into our own style. And that's really the journey for the past 9 years, is just trying to find our own voice.
Mm-hmm. Now, you guys self-taught on guitar, or did you take lessons?
I took lessons for about, I've been playing about 12 years, but I've taken lessons for about 7.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And what kind of, I mean, what type of lessons? Were they more jazz? Were they more classical?
So it's interesting. My guitar teacher is actually a 10-string classical guitarist.
Ooh.
And so I started out with a little classical, and then I showed interest in rock and pop and stuff. So he showed me some of that. And so I mainly focused on that, occasionally going back to classical. But then when I went to Cal State Northridge for their music industry studies program, they still required us that we do an instrument. So I took about 2 years of classical guitar there as well.
Mm-hmm. So you had a classical. Have you studied otherwise?
Similar thing. I took like about 4 years of just the with the guitar instructor there, private lessons.
Okay, and you went to the same school.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just a little neighborhood shop in Arcadia. Mm-hmm. Shout out to them, Neighborhood School Music.
Yes.
Yeah, cool. They do. Mm-hmm. It's really great for the community.
Well, that's important.
Friends from
yeah.
high school, you know, going there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. No, my old teacher was a club player from Louisiana.
Mm.
So we learned the fake book. We learned how to,
What was his name?
Aaron Campbell was his name. Mm. He had some great guitars too. Mm-hmm. Man, he had an original jazz master. And I digress though. Anyway. But anyway, so well, that's really interesting then. So you have, and one thing you'll notice on this album, now I'm only playing small clips of it. There's a lot more development. And let me say up front, this album is definitely vocal. They're one of their strong parts are their harmonies and stuff. You'll hear some of it in there, but I'm really not focusing on the lyric portion. I'm going into the guitars to talk about the arrangements and stuff and the production. But when you listen to the album, you'll hear the vocals are really strong and there's some really cool things that they're doing harmonic wise. But let's talk a little bit about the concept of the album. Now, you guys have done a few albums, right?
That is correct, yes.
So you've been around the block a few times. So talk a little bit about how you came to approach JP and Lisa to produce your album, but also what you were trying to do with this new album. So what's the concept behind it?
For sure. Well, I can speak to how we met them, and then you can do how, the concept of the album. So we actually met JP and Lisa several years ago at the Altadena Coffee Gallery backstage, which is a venue we perform a lot and has a lot of great shows. And they were playing with their amazing instrumental group Incendio. And so eventually we just started talking to them, and JP had mentioned that he was Peruvian, and we obviously come from a Peruvian background. So we started bonding over that, and then just eventually we became family friends, and then they saw that we did music. They would occasionally, actually a lot, they would support us, sometimes bring us on stage, or just give us lots of really helpful advice in terms of guitars, performance, etc. And then eventually we wanted to keep working on our songwriting, and that's when we came to them and basically saying, hey, we're really working on our songwriting, on our original material, and we're looking for someone to produce an album. And we knew they already did amazing stuff with Incendio and lots of other people. So we knew they were literally the perfect people to go, not only because they knew their stuff, but they knew us. They knew where we were coming from, what we wanted to go, and what we wanted to do in this album, which Tony will explain.
Yeah. So basically, for most of the time that we'd been performing, we'd been doing covers. And then with the help of a lot of older musicians, in particular, we got to meet P.F. Sloan, who's the renowned songwriter. And he gave us the advice of, you know, when you learn the covers, that's great, but also learn how to incorporate that when you write your own original material. So basically, at some point, we got over the myth of writer's block. And we just decided, you know, we really need to work on the original material and it's not going to happen overnight. So we decided, let's just try to write a song like every night during the week. So like five times a week, obviously on and on. We just keep on writing. And then from there, we realized more of the importance of songwriting and how we'd play covers and we'd go to like old folks homes and we'd see how we could be of service with our music. But we realized the new dimension of how we can use our music for service when we started to write songs.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that just kind of blossomed the idea of having this concept album of basically young people like us trying to find meaning and purpose in life and how to execute that in helping the community and helping ourselves and trying to find true happiness.
Okay, so that's the main underlying theme of the album.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now let me switch it to you guys, to Lisa and JP. So here are these guys that you're meeting over at the coffee gallery. And then they come up to you. Talk a little bit about the relationship and then developing it from there.
Well, we've gotten to be very close with them over the years and having them come up on stage with us to perform and going over to their house to have dinner and just getting close with them and the family. And we could just see how talented they were and just caring human beings. You know, they really put a lot of care into people as well as their music. So we just developed a very strong friendship, and we just kept encouraging them. You know, they're so talented, and they had done two CDs that were mainly cover material, and we'd heard some of their originals, and we just encouraged them to develop that. And you know, they came to us with sketches, and so they'd come over, and we'd send them home and say, okay, that's a cool part, but it sounds like a chorus, so now go home and write a verse. And then they'd come back, and that was the process. You know, they'd come back, we'd work things, they'd call us, and then we'd kind of talk about things. I'd send back ideas, they'd send us back ideas. And
there were kind of two elements at play. Number one is we had met them when they were very young, and even when they were very young, which is to say like 13, 14, they were really playing well. They were playing well together, and they made harmonies a priority. It was very clear that they had a discipline about what they were doing. And for example, like they would come up and in later years and play like Tango Parabel, and the first time was really fun. They'd come sit in with us, and then the next time it was like they'd get even better. And then Tony started playing guitar more, you know, at these shows, the younger of the two. And it's like, he's getting better. And they're like the musical sponges. They're really picking stuff up. And it's a good time as well to mention that they had played so often, and they were under the mentorship of a lot of different people to help them. But there was a guy named Dwayne Thorin, mm-hmm. who was really important in their development, and was a friend to Lise and I, who we played with, who passed away, unfortunately, a few years ago. But, I mean, by the time they were 16 or 17, they were kind of old hads at performing and engaging with the audience and creating a really, really great spirit. So one of the few things we saw that they hadn't worked on with Dwayne and some of these other people who had mentored them so beautifully is actually kind of songwriting and you know, the process of making their own music, finding their own compositional voice. So it was really just watching and waiting and being involved with their family, and the timing was right. So I think we were, in a sense, always headed in this direction. But in the development was just like, okay, guys, it's really time. So it's nice.
What was the main influence of Dwayne Thorin? Mm-hmm. What did he bring to you? What was the lesson you learned from him? Because he obviously was a big influence, right?
My God, literally everything.
Yeah, but basically, if you didn't encourage us, we probably wouldn't be doing music right now.
Really?
Because the first time we ever performed was at the open mic in the front stage at the Coffee Gallery. And he was the one who encouraged us from the very, very beginning. And just from there, he'd always encourage us, put us up on stage, say, and we'd just like literally learn a song and then play, learn the song and play. Just all throughout, he would help us with voice lessons, and he's just like, he became a very close friend. And just
now, how did you guys?
He's the one that introduced us.
Yeah.
It was Dwayne.
Brought that's them true. And said, "You got to meet these
and,
kids."
And we would do occasional gigs. We would kind of do a double bill. Lise and I would play a duo, and then he'd come up and sing. And he was one of these guys that A, had just an effortless voice, mm-hmm. and B, from like a certain era, he would know every song, whether it was mm-hmm. like Elvis or Engelbert Humperdinck or whatever. He would come up as Chef Duenio, right,
in
some of these things,
so
and sing these Italian, romantic Italian songs. But he really had a voice that was just, that was effortless.
Yeah.
And so because it was effortless and because he loved to sing, he loved to engage in, the audience, and so he had a lot of stagecraft. So he had a lot to show them, and he was just fun for us to play with as well. So it was in that circle, you know, it was cool.
Now, you guys were doing this at the same time you were doing Summoning the Muse, which we had Incendio on just recently, and we took a look at that. So production-wise, was it pretty similar, or what were the differences? What were the challenges here that took you?
Go ahead.
Well, I guess fundamentally, with Incendio, we already have our material and our voice, and kind of we wanted to expand that. With these guys, I think it's safe to say that their songwriting wasn't quite together yet. They had written songs, and they had like chunks and pieces of melody. So there was the pre-production. There was a whole pre-production section which was writing, and I kind of supported that. But I would say, you know, Lisa really knows her stuff in a lot of different ways, and kind of spearheaded that effort. It's like that melody works really well. And, you know, frankly, it didn't take very much. I think it was like a couple of days or a couple of weeks of doing this. And then they're bringing in, like, you know, Rainbow After Rain, play with this song, do this kind of thing. As like, well, they take encouragement and direction very quickly, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And that was what was great about working with them, is that they do take encouragement and direction well. They mm-hmm. don't get defensive. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, let's try that. That's good. And then they go home and they take it to heart. They do their homework. And then we would banter back and forth. You know, we'd just sit maybe for a few hours in the studio and just write things and, like, try that and try this. And but, so it was fun. It was
And it was also a cool learning thing. As we've said numerous times, people their age
have access not only to a bunch of guys. These guys are huge Ariana Grande fans. No disrespect intended. But they know all the modern stuff, but they also really penetratively know the Beatles, the Stones, Zeppelin, Blind Faith, all the stuff that were touched on. So they would say, well, have you listened to this new Ed Sheeran thing? Or have you listened to this other? So they were, their feet are very firmly in two camps. Lisa's a lot better at knowing the modern performers than I am too, but they have a very strong knowledge of that entire field. Like, they've studied it and they know it. So the reference point became, why don't you try to listen to this song, Lisa, JP, that's what we're looking for, or whatever, and bringing a lot of musical intelligence to their choices.
Yeah, they turned us on
a lot of stuff, and was like, I want to do it. I was like, oh, so they did have a very clear direction, I think.
Thank you. Well, we really appreciate your guys' support in helping guiding it, because literally Tony and I think of what we first brought you versus to what the album is now, and we're just like, oh my God, this album literally could not happen without you two.
Not at all.
But that's sometimes you need that outside voice to go,
yeah,
that's that throwaway thing you're doing there, that's a chorus. Mm-hmm. And then, but when you're in it, when you're doing it so long, you don't see that until someone else points it out. And then you go,
exactly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, and they were open to it. Yeah, that's the other thing.
Well, we were open to it because we trusted you two. We knew you guys knew your stuff, and we knew that you guys wanted to help us and wanted what was best for us. You weren't trying to cheat us out or sabotage us or anything like that.
Yeah.
And if they had an idea they really want to hold to, they also held their ground. We really want to try this, and you know, usually
and
work out
it,
really quickly.
No, it's you guys. It's never been an ego thing for you. You do bring out from the different projects that I've seen you guys do, besides your own projects, it brings out the essence of what the group or the people are, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, there's a lot of producers that every album they produce, whatever the artist is, it sounds like them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and I think that's what a good producer should be, is to bring out the artist.
Right.
Yeah.
You need to be sensitive to the artist and make them, it's their signature. There is some things I know myself in production, certain types of things technically that you get a certain sound because you know you mic a certain way or you do something. But I think that you guys have been really good at just, you know, if you listen to the body of work, it's different. It's not all the same. I mean, Incendio's consistent and you can see the evolution of that. But the other acts that you've produced over the years, it's a whole different thing, and it's unique in its own thing.
Well, these guys are very organic, and with Incendio, we brought a lot of synths and loops and things like that. With these guys, I don't think we used any of that, not that I can remember.
You know what? Maybe. We introduced some at the beginning. We're like, "What would you want to try this direction?" And they were very adamantly no. And in that one case, that made it really simple because we all have like the rock thing as a touchstone. You know, they're like, well, we want to do the Keith Richards thing, or we want to do a high string guitar, or whatever. All they were super conversant in being able to say, "Yeah, I want that," or "No, I don't want that." So we, by not doing the whole modern synthy thing, we eliminated one entire, which is great because you gave the album a direction.
Yeah.
You know?
But also, we were able to be turned on to certain synth things that are used on the album that just
very small appointments, little tiny
it
touches.
It adds that little extra.
Yeah.
No,
icing. Yeah, there's some little string pizzicato on. I forget which song it is. There's some little things that you're doing. But let's take a listen. I'm going to play Knock Down the Door, which you have credited Jimmy, Tony, and Lisa.
Yes.
And let me play the song, then we'll talk a little bit about what you were doing and how this developed. Because there's some interesting things in here, and I can hear the JP influence with the Les Paul. So here we go.
Walk away, but the darkness doesn't leave. You still hear people say,
That's a real folk classical influence there. Oh, it sounds great. And that's you doing the lead. Now, what? Now he's using the, that's the Warmoth for the...
I'm pretty sure now the Les Paul, because he did the rhythm guitarist, and something we do a lot and they did a lot on this is to one pass of rhythm guitar, in this case the Les Paul, and that it's all the guitars are in the box. So one side will be Marshall, and another side will be 5150. So the same take, but a different amp. Yeah, in the stereo. So that gives it that nice wide field. We're pretty sure he played the Les Paul, I think, on that solo. That
was that the,
right,
was
right?
That the Les Paul on that it. Lead?
I probably.
But what did you do? There's a processing on there.
Probably put a gentle flange on there or something, or a roto vibe, one of those two. Once again, in the box.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because there's some type of phasing thing going on in there.
Yeah.
It's a cool sound. Heard a little bit of the page.
You said it. You said it before I did, right?
But that's a great sound. Now that the. Originally, when you had written that song, how did, was that written? Was that on acoustic guitar?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. There, that song went through a lot. The chorus was completely different. The lyrics, oh, God, I don't even want to think about the lyrics. But, yeah, it was very different. And so we showed a sketch, essentially the first rough version, to JP and Lisa, and then they said, like, okay, that's good, but what you think what you're presenting as a chorus isn't necessarily maybe a chorus. And so then we worked on a chorus there. And then the lyrics from the very start was Tony, Lisa, and myself. Yeah. Just co-writing from the beginning to end, trying to get the message of the song across.
Mm-hmm. And there was the underlying thought that amongst the audience that they have built regionally and internationally, I think it's safe to say that the flavor of what you guys are known for was a little more folk.
Yes, 100%.
So this and a handful of the other songs were a very conscious effort. And this was the icebreaker.
Yeah.
I was like, I remember saying, now we could push this in a much harder place and they might go for it. They might think it's, you know, too hard for their audience. And they very consciously wanted to push those boundaries. So that's why this sound wound up sounding more like this than the more acoustic flavored thing that you guys.
Well, that must have been an interesting shot because I know him. He's a rocker at heart. Yeah. So and Lisa can hold her own too. She knows how to really crank.
I think they really wanted to rock.
Yeah.
We didn't have to push
it. It didn't take a lot of convincing. No. Yeah, and I think it was a very conscious, you know, decision. It's like you play with your how you are perceived. I mean, we're not the world at large. Does not know them, but they've developed some notoriety here. They also are you know, have communities and pockets of support throughout the world. And it's like, this is really what we want, especially the lyrics, you know, knock down the door. The notion of service and being aggressive about, you know, calling out hypocrisy and people acting poorly. That was an underlying thought in lyrics, and I thought it came through very forcefully. I thought you guys did a great job.
Thank you.
That's great. I mean, it's a rocker. I love the this, and that's a great lead.
Thank you.
Great lead.
And it should be said to Tony, when we first met Tony, he was playing drums, so he's quite a great drummer as well.
All right.
And they also play mandolin and quite a few other instruments.
Yeah, I heard that on some of the cuts. There's a couple of them. Let's take a look at this song. I think this one's a little more mellow. This is one you wrote for them, "Bird in Flight." Let's take a listen to this, and we'll talk a little about that, because this is with shock. I'll tell you after the clips played, because I was shocked. But I'll tell you why I was shocked after I played this clip. So here's "Bird in Flight."
She said, "I don't think I'm ready to settle down. I'm kind of wondering about the next town. But if you'll travel around the world with me, then maybe we'll come back to that old willow tree." She was as wild as a bird in flight. Her smile said, "I cannot be tamed." But there was something in her eyes as dark as the night. But my love would always remain. My love would always remain. My love would always remain.
Mm-hmm. I was looking at who did the whistling, because it's like, did he sample that? And but the thing that shocked me is that bass is a sampled bass. That's Trillion, right? Yeah. That was on Trillion. Yeah. I'm like, because I was like, where did they get that upright? I'm like, I can't remember Lisa. I've never seen Lisa with an upright bass. And it's like, and then I read the notes. I'm like, dang, that's great. Sounds really good. And
there's a lot of articulations in Trillion that you could do. So you set up a bunch of different MIDI tracks, and you have, you know, the meat and potato sound, and you have the slides, the glissandos, you have a couple of them, and then you just sprinkle a little bit of them through, and then it gets people going like, is that an actual bass?
Yeah.
What's going on there? So it's,
well,
it's
that sounded
it's,
real to
it's
me.
It's in the programming. It's just little bends and little slides and things like that.
Now, there's some interesting things going on. There's a lot of, even though that's a very, you know, it's not a big arrangement, a lot of orchestration and stuff, but there's a lot of guitars. There's a lot of stuff happening in there. So who's doing the finger picking? That finger picking at the beginning. Is that you?
Is it you? You're doing the finger picking on
laying around.
I'm doing the finger picking on that one.
Because that's a great folk style. I mean, it's just spot on. And then who's doing the rhythm stuff? You're doing the rhythm stuff. Then there's a twangy guitar in the back.
It's as good a time as any.
Yeah.
To say hello to our friends at Reverend Guitars in beautiful Toledo, Ohio. If you show them the
new acquisition.
This guitar was used in about 50%, 60% of the guitars on the album. A lot of rhythm work, a lot of the twang. These are East Sider Tees, Pete Anderson signature models. And based on the work that this just sounded so great on the album, they got in contact with Reverend Guitars and Ken Haas and the good guys there. And they made available, hello Penny, hello everybody, hi Zach. They made available this to them, which has the roasted maple neck, these same locking tuners.
Is that roasted maple or is that?
Yeah, roasted maple.
That looks like walnut, that fretboard. Or it looks like a walnut, the grain. But I might be wrong.
No, I think you might be right, actually. No,
oh, that's right. Rosewood. No, that looks like a rosewood fretboard.
Well, I think they talked about the specifically the roasted maple. It's a little more, it has all the moisture pulled out, super stable, rock hard, and you've used it on a gig, or you've at least tried it.
Signed it. They're the same model.
It sounds fantastic. Response, super great.
Yeah, you talked a little about the response. Live, it's just like you hear it, the new blooms out. And so, Reverend, thank you. Very cool. Yeah. So that's what you're hearing.
Do these sound pretty similar, or is there a big difference?
We haven't tried. You could speak to that more.
They sound both really good and very similar,
My guess is since this is still supposed to be roasted maple, they sound pretty similar, and Joe Naylor just, you know, is killing on the pickups. So the only difference with these is we didn't use the barrels. We do have individual pull pieces, which for intonation's sake, it's really like, everybody's like, go with barrels. I'm like, I'm perfectly happy with this for right now. So
this should have more sustain.
Yeah.
Lift it up a little more.
Because really
there's more mass to it. Mm-hmm. And I forget what these are made out of, but I think they're heavier.
Go through your body.
Yeah, it goes through the body. So it flips around, so it gives it maximum sustain. Mm-hmm. Those are good. That was a development later on.
And these little locking tuners here up at the top are so good for tuning and stability. If you can see up here, they both have them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, these are just killer guitars. Reverend is doing beautiful work. So.
It's scalloped. There's like this leans in a little bit, so it's a little bit of a curve.
It's hard to see. It's almost a little easier to see on his, too, to give... access to the top. You see, that's going to be hard to see on Facebook.
Well, you have two other screws in there.
Yeah, six.
No, there's, what are these two?
I actually don't know. You don't have them. Oh.
Yeah.
I have more screws than you.
There you go.
You know what that means?
With age.
Yeah. Anyhow, that's our big...
It's a great sounding guitar. And all of the tones that you're getting in there. Now, that acoustic guitar is the Gibson, right?
Yeah. Gibson 66 Country and Western.
It was a 66? That thing sounds great. That's really a rich sound.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it just tracked beautifully for all those. You guys played it beautifully on those tracks. Did you use these on any...
No, we just used these for roughs.
Roughs and...
Laying around?
Oh, yes, we use this on laying around.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, I'm going to play this cut with Look Up.
Ooh.
Another one written by all three of you guys. Mm-hmm. And this one has Billy Sullivan. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know what? I just want to mention something that you said earlier because, you know, you play so many instruments. This guy plays so many instruments. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that they know this. The whistling that I did, kind of like, do you like the whistling? The whistling I did was from the original kind of demo that we presented to you guys. Yeah. I could never get my lips or anything wet or correct enough to ever do it again. Mm-hmm. And that part is basically sampled from like three or four of the only acceptable parts for the original. Because I think you tried.
We all tried. It was hard.
Yeah. And so those are like, okay, those are the only parts that work. So that was save your tracks and save your whistling.
Right. I mean, that's the pitch is right. That's not easy to do.
No.
It really isn't.
We did a great job. It wasn't. They tried to do it. I couldn't do it.
You can buy those samples. He will be selling those, and you can actually put it in your HX Stomp and just hit it on your. It'll play your guitar.
The CD called Zippity JP. Thank you.
Oh, no.
It's right. Absolutely correct. Yeah.
So, anyway, this one, you have a couple of great drummers on this album.
Billy.
We've got three.
Yeah, I want to play that other one too with the Hall of Famer.
Pete Thomas.
Yeah. So anyway, let's go ahead and play. This one is called "Look Up," let me play it, and then you guys. It seems better to let you guys react to what I put out there. So here's a clip. "Look Up." Take a listen. So that great vocal arrangement, that's just killer. And I love those little pizzicato string things that you're doing in the background. That's really cool.
The vocal arrangements, all these guys, we just honed it, but those ideas are theirs.
We didn't hone it. She honed it with them. I was not in the room. These guys worked for hours and hours getting stuff right. Basically, they would conceive it and they would throw it off. Lisa would be, okay, that's good, and record it, try it, and
So you were in the other room trying to whistle.
Yeah. For days.
Took him months.
Now, there's some interesting things in there. Okay, that's the Gibson Country Western, right? Playing the acoustic guitar, beautiful sound. Then you're doing a mandolin. What kind of mandolin do you use?
We just use an old Rover.
It's an old Rover
we got from a waitress in Mississippi. He said, I'll take your mom's Elvis t-shirt if I give you a mandolin that we have.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I think that was a good trade.
I didn't know that. That's a good deal.
Yeah. That's a really good
trade. It tracks really nicely.
It's
an arch top one, right, with the F holes.
Yeah. It's got the...
It looks like the F-Series mm-hmm. Gibson. Mm-hmm. So now what else is going on there? There's some good electric guitars in there. There's like a tremolo type of thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of tremolo on the guitar. We tend to lean towards kind of older tones, and these guys like that as well. So that, which we use a lot on the album, is basically the Fender Twin setting, the best clean setting that you can get, fully dimed on guitar rig, and then with the tremolo circuit on, and that was it. But we use that a lot on this album, and maybe a little bit of a Tube Screamer kind of emulation for grit sometimes.
Yeah, there's some
grit.
But
usually just open up the amp all the way on the emulator and emulation and guitar rig. and it works really nicely.
And that is one that we used a little synth on. You hear that?
The pizzicato.
The pits. Yeah. The pits was cool. But is there any strings in the background?
Yep.
When they do that second vocal thing where it's pretty lush.
Yep.
So there's some pads in there?
Probably Omnisphere, maybe.
I'm sure it's Omnisphere pad. And then we are big fans of Ivory, but we used Keyscape all the way through this. So that's Keyscape, all the Spectrasonic suite of stuff that we were using on this.
Yeah, and then the other thing I want to mention, there was a very cool little break in there, little pod break in there. Dun, dun, dun. Whether you're doing with the guitar, you follow, there's a little line. Mm-hmm. And then you do this really quick bass thing in there.
Oh, yeah.
All these little melodies sparking off each other.
And it's that kind of ear candy is really cool. Yeah.
They like the solo. We're like, okay, let's keep that. And then when we're finishing the piano, it's like, wait, what happens if we just follow the piano line there and have guitar and piano do that melody line, and then it kind of dovetails into Lisa's thing. So it's all these little melodies that are sparking out, and which is, you know, because we all love
so
the Beatles.
Fun.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what
it takes. And those drums sound huge.
Yeah, that's Bill. The connective tissue there between this project and Incendio is we recorded the all of Tim Curl's drums at Billy Sullivan's studio up here in North Hollywood. Billy Sullivan, I guess, played with Steve Vai years ago, and then recently did the Youth Symphony thing with him again.
A couple years ago.
But he works a lot with Thomas Newman, a composer. Mm-hmm. Note. He's in that Newman group of guys, and he composes and does film scores on his own and all that too. So he's got his own band. They tour Europe. He's coming back and doing film scores. So the guy is always busy, and it's a nice shot. It was lovely to work with him. I'm sure we'll do the same in the future.
And then Tom Breckline played on just about everything else except the one that Pete played on. And Tom just did an amazing job.
Did he do that at that studio too?
No, Billy.
Billy did, but Tom did it where?
Tom did it at his own studio in Austin. So we just would send him the tracks, and he'd send them back to us.
Back.
Yeah,
With Incendio, we tend to do fairly elaborate demos that indicate, you know, kick here, snare here. Here are the notes. Try this hi hat there. So we get pretty, you know, into it. And
how many tracks did he send you? How did he break it out?
Kick, snare, two overheads.
I think he's
three toms, two room mics.
No, he didn't send us room mics.
Didn't send us room.
No, Pete did.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, Tom was just getting his studio going, so he just sent us either 8 or 9. I think he gave us 2 on snare, but he'd send us several takes and he'd call and say, "Do you guys like that?" And I can redo it. And yeah, he was just great to work with.
Was it a pretty dry sound, and then you reverbed it, or did he gave you a pretty? Because it sounded like you were able to spread it out. It sounds really full. Now, I'm going to ask you about this one. I'm going to play this clip, which is a really different clip. And another drummer, and then we'll go, we'll play one of the other ones with the drummer you had just mentioned. But this is an interesting story, which you wrote in your notes for this. So this is Time's Running Out. So tell me a little bit about how this came together.
They put this song together, and I am, you know, we all love great guitar, and we love Van Halen, we love Hendrix and all these other things, but I absolutely love Elvis Costello. But at the time that, you know, Jeff was mentoring me, you know, sending me tapes of Tower of Power and all these other things, I went to college. I went to UC Berkeley, and my first year roommate was an Elvis Costello fanatic, and he put on This Year's Model, and I was like, this is the best thing I've heard. There's not one guitar solo on the entire album. It's just the angriest, best breakup album ever. And there was a song on there called Lipstick Vogue. And I said, the way they were writing and Lisa was helping and supporting them with write, it's like, God, this is so cool that, you know, this would sound great. What if? And we made a couple of calls, and What If actually happened. And they got to have Pete Thomas on their album. I got to work with one of my idols. And it was just super, super cool. And he just plays his butt off on this. Yeah. And
he sent you tracks on this?
Yeah. Yeah. But
they were
here in LA. We took the tracks to Red Star Recording Studio. And Tim Sonnefeld, who ended up helping us with mixing on both albums, gave us a lot of advice and a lot of support. We went to that. You guys came to the session.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, it was cool. What'd you think of Pete?
Oh, he's so humble and down to earth.
Yeah,
he's amazing.
Like one of our favorite drummers for sure.
And he was just really gracious and really funny. And we went out to Peruvian food afterwards. Mm-hmm. And then the part that he played was like a Pete Thomas part. You're like, oh my God, that's Pete Thomas. Yeah. It sounds like Pete Thomas. That's him.
Yes.
Okay. Now to do this song, I'm going to go ahead and play it in a minute, but you might as well talk about the arrangement for this. So what did you do? What are you going for here?
They kind of gave me free rein, and all I wanted to do was recreate the attractions. Except with a little bit like more Ramones-y kind of guitar, or a little more like a Les Paul power punk knack kind of thing. Was the only real difference in the guitar, because then I did the keyboard as well. It's like, I get to be the attractions for a day. We sketched it out pretty well, and they're like, go for it. So by the time he got it, it was pretty well sketched out.
Mm-hmm. And so JP's playing bass on this one, because he had to.
Yeah, I got to play Bruce Thomas. I got to do the amazing keyboard player, Steve Naive. So I got to be the band.
So the you have in your notes, the chunky rhythm is the East Sider. Mm-hmm. And you're playing that?
Yeah.
And then the solo guitar is the Les Paul?
Yes.
And then the organ is your Arturia B3?
Yeah.
So, okay, well, let's take a listen to this, and you can see what he's doing. It's an interesting arrangement. Definitely captures the style.
Power pop from the late 70s and early 80s. That's what it
is. Our good friend Pat DiPuccio will be very happy that you did this.
Yes. Hi, Pat. I think you're going to like this one.
Here we go. Time's running out.
But he stole that from me too. There's never time to keep a heart from crying. There's never time to make room for something true. 'Cause now I know I can love again. The hands of the ticking clock are gonna kill me. Now I know I can't deny the running out. The running out. The running out.
That kicks. Definitely kicks.
Everybody in the studio was, wait for it. Is he going to give us that Pete Thomas thing?
And he did at the end. Yeah. And then we just synchronized everything to that. Mm-hmm. He gave us the Pete Thomas ending. We were so excited.
It sounds great. And that's all in the box, too. Is the East Sider, and then the rest of it's Les Paul?
Yeah. East Sider through, once again, on guitar rig, I think it's AC-30. And then probably some sort of Marshall-y type sound. That was it. It was fun. And it has to be said, if you're an Elvis Costello fan, you're a fan of all those things, you're a fan of Bruce Thomas, and that's why those lines move a lot. Those super poppin' bass lines are all like Bruce Thomas stuff, and I love, like the stuff he played on Lipstick Vogue. So it was like, oh, God, I get a chance to do it.
Did you play the Hennewinkle on that, or the Tobias?
Hennewinkle.
That's a great bass. The great bass lines. Now, you using fingers or pick?
Fingers.
It sounds really
pick
good.
Pick to me never sounds right for that stuff.
He's learned a lot from you. There's definitely an influence there.
Absolutely.
Now, that song was apropos because it said that time's running out and we're almost out of time. But I want to talk about Hollow Reed next. And this is interesting because this is a traditional song, and you guys... it's a spiritual song, but you just took it in a whole different direction. So tell me a little bit about the evolution of this song.
Yeah. Well, we probably set the music to it about a few years ago.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But just we really wanted to, as we were talking about the development of it, we really wanted to capture the urgency of really what a prayer is. And we come from the Baha'i faith. And just we wanted to capture that sense of, you know, desperation and like, that really to get that emotion out with this song. And so we decided that We really wanted to get, you know, kind of like a B.B. King feel in the background and then mix it with.
So originally you wanted to blues it up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
What's the traditional song like? Is it just a folk
It's note? Actually just
it's just words.
Prayer.
Yeah. Yeah. No one has put music to it.
Oh, so there was no music originally.
It's just words.
Mm-hmm. And let me interject real quick because there's another one that you did, Fire.
Yes.
Is that just a prayer too? There was no music?
Yeah, we took collections from the writings of the Bible, the Quran, as well as the Baha'i writings.
Yep. Okay, and so then, there wasn't any original music. You basically... No. Set it to its
exactly.
So let me go ahead and play this. This is very interesting because the blues sound is really, it adds a whole different dimension to it, and it's just like going totally in a different direction, but it works.
Thank you.
And so here's Hollow Reed. Let me play this. That's an interesting way of presenting that. Now, I was showing the guitars. There's a lot more text to it and lyric to it, but you get a little bit of the feel of it. So the first lead is you.
Yes, that is correct.
And what are you using?
A 335.
That's a 335?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And what was the amp, Marshall?
Yes, for him. It was either that or Mesa Boogie. It's probably Marshall.
I'm pretty sure it was a Marshall, yeah.
Yeah.
And then and what are you using for the second?
The Warmoth Strat on the back, the old tried and true,
okay.
The neck pickup.
And then who's doing the fills at the end?
Me, and that was from the original demo.
Oh,
So we went back. So that's kind of a little bit of a thinner sound, and we decided to just keep that. It works, and I'm pretty sure that's the Strat as well.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, you know, Jimmy just played his butt off. They both did, you know, in a lot of different things, but he took the solos and, you know, in both those tunes just sounded fantastic.
Yeah.
You heard the Jimmy Page, and that was pretty funny.
Yes, I would notice that.
In this one, I mean, to have that, you know, be really young and have that feel, you know, have a genuine, and then be able to perform like they do and write like they do and all triple threat.
Thank you.
Young guys.
Tony literally helped me so much with that solo, too. Like, the night before we recorded, we're like, okay, shoot, we need a solo. And I couldn't think of anything. He's like, okay, try this, 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 and this, and then it just came out.
Yeah, that's the other remarkable thing about the way these guys collaborate. They definitely have each other's backs and really work on a lot of parts. And they are so supportive of each other. And when they believe in something and don't agree, they're pretty vocal about that, too. But that doesn't happen that often. Just very, very encouraging. And, you know, that sounded great. You know, that didn't really sound that good. Try that again. You know, it was great to work with rather than like work with the two brothers that are fighting all the time.
Well, that's interesting. No, you guys are definitely supportive. I mean, my brother and I, we always fought. But I was the one, like, he was a purist. And it's like, let's flange that. I got this Echoplex. Let me use it. No. But that's the way I was. But that was part of our sound. Evidently, it evolved because that conflict actually made us unique, you know. But it's funny, but it's beautiful. I mean, what you guys were doing in terms of the context is just it's a it's a setting for that that I would never think of.
It's devotional. It really is devotional music. Just it's devotional blues, which is, you know,
right.
Blues but has that fundamental.
If anything's from the heart, it's blues, and it really works well. Okay. Well, I told you guys we'd be out of time.
Yes.
And I want to let them play live before we leave, and they're going to take us out with the song called Rainbow After Rain. And I'll let you guys set it up in a minute, but I just want to let everybody know the Lakota Brothers, BROTHERS.com is their website, and you can see all this stuff. For JP and Lisa, CarbeAndDuran.com, you can check out what they're doing besides the Incendio pages and check out their album, Summoning the Muse. It's a killer album. And check out the show we had a couple of weeks ago. You'll hear some of the clips of that. It's just really cool. But this album, Kindle the Flame, is really, take a listen. There's some pretty diverse things that they're doing, and the arrangements are just awesome. And the guitar sounds and what they're doing all together is just really, it's really good.
Available maybe in the next month?
Yes.
The next
it's not out yet. I thought it was out.
Not out yet. This is the brand, but nobody's heard this before. This is the
sneak
debut.
Peek. Sneak peek.
Hugely.
Yeah, so anyway, this will be out soon, and it's definitely one to take a listen to because they're doing some really interesting stuff. So thank you guys. I really thank you. And JP, Lisa, thank you for introducing to them.
Of course.
Tell me a little bit, set up this song, and then we'll just take ourselves out on this.
It's coincidental. This is actually, I believe, the first song we showed to them in the beginning, and it happened to be the last song on the recording. Because we ended up having to reamp the lyrics.
Work on it a lot.
So this kind of goes full circle with the whole idea of the album and how much we learned from the start to beginning throughout the whole process. And just the song's about finding hope and despair and just trying to put a old rock story to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Now that sounds good. Thank you again, JP, Lisa. Thank you. I'm going to mute our mics so we can let them play and I'll just fade out as they're going. Everybody else, we'll see you next week. Thank you for listening and watching, and have a good week. So take it away.
Thank you.
One, two, three.
Thank you.
walked away with a sigh. But something deep inside told me to look up. Then I laughed as drops fell from the sky. There's a rainbow, there's a rainbow, there's a rainbow.